one other announcement that we need to make, actually a card to read. This is from Sue Rogers. And Sue, I didn't read this card a minute ago because the notes that I made to remind myself of what else to announce, I wrote them on the back of the envelope the card was in. But Miss Sue says, to my church family, thank you very much for your donation to Agape in honor of my sister, Mary Lou Sutton. I love each and every one of you in him, Sue Rogers. And so we appreciate that from her, and we appreciate that we can love one another. And when we grieve together. When we hurt together sometimes. And that we can encourage one another even in times like that. I want you to look for a moment at Ephesians chapter 4. We're going to be looking once again at something about from Proverbs primarily this evening. In fact, we're going to talk about Proverbs and money. But before we look at that, I want you to look at Ephesians chapter 4. And as we look at a passage there that I know is very familiar to us, I have gained a new insight into this particular text. Because there's a verse in here that tells us basically there are three ways that we may attain money, or three ways that we can get wealth. If you look at Proverbs chapter 4, verse 28, it tells us, let him who stole steal no more, but rather let him labor working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need. There are really three ways that are briefly mentioned in this particular verse, the sentence, as to how people acquire money, how people get wealth. I want you to notice, number one, you can steal it. Number two, you can work for it, labor for it. Or number three, it can be given to you because you're in need. And as you think about those three ways that this verse shows us that we may receive wealth, of course we understand that stealing is wrong. Even the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20 verse 15, you know, thou shalt not steal. We understand that work is honorable. And we also understand that giving is a blessing. And Jesus said, in, as it's recorded in Acts 20, verse 35, it's more blessed to give than receive. And as we look at that text, sort of as our launching point, we now are going to transition over to Proverbs. And as we do that, we're going to spend the evening tonight looking at these different ways, or looking at these three different categories, as we think about the thief, the person who steals money, as we think about the person in need, not necessarily poor, but often is, but we think about first the thief, secondly the poor, or those who are in need, and then third, the honest laborer or worker. And there is much, much, much in the book of Proverbs about each and every one of these. In fact, we'll not be able to cover all of the things that are said in this book concerning each one of these particular individual or characteristics about them. So let's kind of jump into this, and let's begin with number one, thinking about those who steal money, thieves. And as we think about that, we're going to think of two different kinds of thieves. Number one, there are the liars, and number two, there is the lazy. So the lazy and the liars are the two different kinds of thieves that we want to think about. Turn to Proverbs chapter 21. We're going to think about the liars for just a minute. And in Proverbs chapter 21, we read about one way that people get wealth that perhaps is extremely, extremely questionable. In fact, this verse tells us that there are some other ways that people get wealth, but none of it very scrupulous, none of it very honest. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 5, and we'll refer back to this verse a couple of times during the course of the lesson. But Proverbs 21, verse 5, the plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty. The plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty, but those of everyone who is hasty surely to poverty. Getting treasures by a lying tongue is the fleeting fantasy of those who seek death. Now, as you look at the text, it says there are people who lie in order to get money. There are people who deceive, who con, who trick others in order to get money, in order to acquire wealth, in order to pad their own bank account. There are people who will lie about it. And it would seem that in the second part of verse 5, when it says, those who are hasty, you know, the first part says, the plans of the diligent surely lead to plenty. But the plans of those who are hasty surely lead to poverty. You get the impression, especially when you connect it with verse 6, that there's something very negative there about being hasty. And I think perhaps we would make an application here of when we want to get rich quick. There are many get rich quick schemes in the world. And there are many who are unscrupulous and conning and duping and fooling and lying to people under the guise of, I'm going to get you wealthy in a hurry. You see commercials about it. You read things about it all the time. And we see that those plans, those hasty plans, those very unadvised plans, often lead to completely the opposite. In fact, sometimes they lead to people spending many, many years in jail. They lead to people losing much of their life savings. They lead to all kinds of heartache and misery and sorrow because somebody's trying to steal. Because that's one of the ways you can get money. You can steal it. And apparently, as you look in this verse, verses 5 and 6, money, treasures, this acquirement of wealth, it comes by a very unscrupulous, dishonest kind of way. And as you think about that, we see how that it's a very negative thing, this lying. Here's another idea about lying to get money, and that's being dishonest. Look at Proverbs chapter 11, verse 1. Proverbs 11 talks about scales, you know, a scale of measurement. And there are numerous passages in the book of Proverbs, this is just one of several, that talk about scales, and specifically dishonest scales of a merchant. And Proverbs 11 verse 1 says, dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. Now we understand that when you go to the grocery store, because we live in a country where things have been regulated by the Bureau of Standards and Measurements, that you buy a pound of something, that scale has been regulated and set, and it's supposed to be checked, you know, and inspected on at least an annual basis, that it is giving you what you're paying for. But not every merchant was that way. Not every merchant during the times of Solomon was that way. And they rigged their scales. And you would pay for much less than you actually thought you were buying. You would pay much more for much less than you thought you were actually buying. And it says, that's lying. That's dishonest. And this is an abomination to the Lord. And so you can get wealth. You can acquire money by lying, by being dishonest, by doing the things that we would categorize as unscrupulous and dishonest, but they all are condemned as we think about getting money by stealing it, because it really falls into that category. But now, secondly, we want to think about laziness, because we're going to put this under this category of stealing, because much of the way that we're going to talk about this through the book of Proverbs, how people get wealth, or they, you know, the connection of money, they don't get wealth, or how they are condemned because of their laziness, it fits under this category of basically of stealing. Yeah, I think you'll see that as we develop this idea of being lazy, because really, probably the greatest theft, the greatest number of theft, the biggest thieves in the world are lazy people who would work, who could work, but they won't. And really, that's theft. It's theft of talents from God. It's theft from family. It's very negative in so many ways. In fact, the words slothful man and sluggard, the phrase slothful man or the term sluggard, are mentioned at least 17 times in the book of Proverbs. And nothing good is ever said any of those times. And so it's really like being a theft. And I think we need to or being a thief and taking from others. And I think we need to establish that there's something very positive about work. Work is not a curse. You know, you look back when man sinned, that God cursed the ground and so on, and that man had to work after that. And some people have misunderstood that and said, well, God made us work because of the curse of sin. That was part of the punishment. No. Go back a little further in the book of Genesis, and you'll see that when man was put in the garden, he was given work then. Before sin ever entered the picture, his responsibility was to, as the King James Version says, to dress and keep the garden. And I remember as a kid thinking about Adam putting shirts on shrubs and things like that as he was dressing and keeping the garden. But he had a job to do. He had a responsibility to fulfill. Jesus, in his ministry, the book of Mark chapter 6 tells us that before he entered his ministry, that he was a carpenter. The Apostle Paul, before he entered his ministry, was a tent maker, and sometimes during his ministry as an apostle, had to fall back onto that to support himself. Work is not a curse. Work is very, very honorable. And laziness is something that basically is condemned in the Scriptures. It's condemned very much in the book of Proverbs. And we'll see how, as we think about it, being in this category of stealing, that it's a very unscrupulous way either to acquire money or even to have money that you could get, but you don't get it because you're so lazy and you're unwilling to work. Here are four marks, if you would write this down. Here are four identifying characteristics of the sluggard, of the slothful man, of the lazy person. Here are four identifying characteristics. Number one, the sluggard loves to sleep. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 9. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from sleep? Now, if you ever had a teenager, you know exactly what's going on here. But how long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from sleep? And Proverbs 26, verse 14 says, as a door turns on its hinges, so does a lazy man on his bed. A lot of motion, a lot of activity, but no work. You know, a lot of moving around, but no work. Like the door on the hinges. Never gets anywhere. Moves all the time, but always stays in the same place. And in this case, it's the bed. So the sluggard, he loves to sleep. Number two, the sluggard is more of a hindrance than he is a help. He is more of a nuisance than he is a help. In Proverbs chapter 10, verse 26, it says, Proverbs 10, 26, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes. Now you think about that for just a minute. Vinegar to the teeth, smoke to the eyes. Neither one of those are fatal. They are very irritating. They're very aggravating. What's the comparison? Read the rest of the verse. So is the sluggard to them that send him. The sluggard is more of a hindrance. He's more of a nuisance than he is a help. Like we said, it's not lethal, but he's not somebody who's dependable, who's going to get the job done. You can't trust him to get the job done. And it's like somebody pouring vinegar on your teeth. It's like, I just wish I had never done that. But that's an identifying characteristic of the lazy man. Number three. The lazy man, the sluggard, is identified with his attitude, which is a know-it-all attitude. Chapter 26, verse 16. Chapter 26, verse 16. The lazy man is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. You see, the lazy man, the sluggard, the slothful man, tries to solve everything with his mouth, and not with his hands. You know, sometimes when my kids were just a little bit younger, and I'm not going to the extreme that this passage does about them, but sometimes when my kids were a little bit younger, they might lose something. And they would walk around saying, I can't find, fill in the blank, and trust me, there's lots of things to fill that blank in with, but I can't find, and they say something. And finally, one day I said, look with your eyes and your hands and not your mouth. Because all you're doing is walking around saying, I can't find it. And I said, look with your eyes. Use your hands. Pick some things up. Maybe it's under there. The foolish man, the sluggard, he wants to solve everything with his mouth. He has this know-it-all, superior attitude in which he says, no need for me to go to work, no need for me to do anything, because I'll just tell you all the answers. And that's one of his identifying characteristics. Fourth, final identifying characteristic of the sluggard, and you know this probably pretty well, they're good at making excuses. The lazy man, the sluggard, is good at making excuses. In chapter 20, verse 4, he can't plow because it's too cold. And twice in the book of Proverbs, chapter 23, verse 13, and chapter 26, verse 13, they're both verse 13, chapter 22 and chapter 26, the lazy man says, I can't go outside, there might be a lion out there. I mean, we have come to the ultimate absurd excuse. I'm not going to go outside and work. I'm not going to go outside and plow in the garden. I'm not going to go. It's too cold. There might be a lion out there. These folks are awfully good at making excuses. Whereas, as the diligent man, he is finding reasons to work, whereas the lazy man is finding reasons not to work. You see why he's a thief? You see why he falls into that same category of someone that would be identified and thought of like that? What finally happens to the sluggard? What finally happens to the lazy man? Well, they end up in hunger and poverty. And chapter 19, verse 15 says, laziness casts one into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. You know, there's a New Testament principle found in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 15, that says, if any man will not work, you know the rest of it, don't you? Neither should he eat. And really, there's not much difference between the lying thief and the lazy thief. They're very much the same. And this at least one of the things that the book of Proverbs says about money. But now, let's move to a second category. Remember, we're basing this off of Ephesians 4:28. Let's think about those who are poor or those who are in need. The book of Proverbs has much to say about that as well. And as we make this transition, we have to realize that when we think about the poor and the needy, some are such because of the laziness we just talked about. Some are such because of the lying that we just talked about. Some fall into the poverty, and the book of Proverbs says that. Some fall into that kind of poverty and being in need because they were lazy and because they did lie and they did try to do all these things, but not everyone. We have to understand that does not identify everyone who is in need. That does not identify everyone who is poor. Not all poor people are lazy. Not all poor people are liars. I do not believe that at all. I used to know a family when we were over in Florence, and there were several girls in the family, and this was when the girls who are now senior citizens were talking about when they were young, and that they were not wealthy people. They were poor people, and that they lived in a small house, and they had moved into this small house, and their mother was having them clean it. And they were going over the house and cleaning it just so thoroughly. And one of the girls said, you know, Mama, why are we cleaning this house so much, you know? And the mother said, we may be poor, but we're not nasty. We're going to be clean. And at some point in this process, you know, they were scrubbing one of the floors. And one of the girls said, you know, I've heard if you put too much water on these floors like this, these wood floors, it might ruin them. And the mother said, we're going to ruin them some more. We're not going to be lazy. We are going to be clean. And we may be poor, but we're going to be respectable. And so not everybody who falls into these categories would
necessarily be in the first category of lying and lazy, but there are people who are poor and needy for various reasons. Let's think about what causes poverty sometimes, what causes people to be in need. Number one, and not all of these are positive, but some of them are negative, but as we think about this, number one, some people are poor because they won't work. The passage from 2 Thessalonians 3, the passages that we've already thought about from Proverbs, work is available, but they simply will not take it. Proverbs 10, verse 4, lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. Proverbs 20, verse 13, do not love sleep, lest you come to poverty. So some people are poor because they won't work. Not everyone is that the case, but some are. Number two, some people are poor because they talk and they never act. There's some overlap here between the lazy person and the poor person, because sometimes it's the same person. But some people are poor because they talk and they never act. Proverbs 14, verse 23, in all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. In other words, some people are very good at running their mouth all the time, but they're not very good at using their hands at hard work. And so which one characterizes each one of us? A third reason sometimes that people are in need or that they have poverty is because of unwise financial decisions. And that's not necessarily to blame the person who's in need or the person who is poor. They may have been conned. Remember the verse we read at the beginning in Proverbs 21, verse 5? Those who are hasty in their schemes and those who lie to get money. Well, guess what? That's the culprit. That's the instigator. But somebody had to be the one that was conned. Somebody had to be the one that was fooled and duped and swindled out of his money. And sometimes people, for various reasons, fall for something like that. And because they make unwise financial decisions and they commit their money to things that they should not have, well, they end up on the very short end of the stick. And it's very unfortunate when that happens. In fact, Proverbs 17, verse 18 warns us against something. Proverbs 17, 18 says, a man devoid of understanding. That's pretty strong language there. A man devoid of understanding shakes hands in a pledge and becomes surety for his friend. In other words, he co-signs on a loan. And it may be that the friend has fooled him, has duped him into co-signing on the loan because he's going to skip town and he's going to skip the payments. And now, the man who signed on it, who co-signed on it, he's stuck with it. And so sometimes we make unwise financial decisions and we find ourselves in need. I guess all of us have lost money in investments. All of us have lost money in ways that we'd maybe even be a little embarrassed to talk about. And yet, there are those who seem to have worse luck than others and lose a lot of money because of unwise decisions. A fourth way that people become poor or they become in need is simply because of circumstances over which they have absolutely no control. Some people experience poverty. Some people experience things of this nature because they have things happen to them that they did not cause, they did not invite, and they have no control over. It could be a catastrophic illness. It could be some kind of terrible financial loss of an investment that was due to no fault of the investor. The book of Proverbs says in 13, verse 23, a poor man's field may produce abundant food, but injustice sweeps it away. Somebody may take everything the poor man has. Somebody may rob him. Somebody may con him. And we see that often these are circumstances over which people really have no control. And we see that these become people in need. You remember our text over in Ephesians 4, verse 28? Don't steal any longer. Rather do what? Labor with your hands that you may have substance to do what? Help him who is in need. There are times when we're going to be in need. And it seems that it has become a identifying characteristic that when we are in need, it's somehow a shameful thing. We're very embarrassed to tell one another, I'm short, I'm in need. We may lose our house. We can't pay this bill. We're embarrassed to tell one another that. I guess to a very large extent, I understand that. And yet, sometimes, to help someone in need, we need to know about the need. And sometimes the only way we can know is if the person in need tells us. Don't suffer like that alone. We are here to help one another. Look at the example of the New Testament church in Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4. Those people had needs, and they all went together and they provided for one another. And I think, yes, that was spiritual, and I think it was emotional, but yes, I believe there was some financial arrangement there as well. And so we help one another when we are in need. Because sometimes, it's not because you were unscrupulous. It's not because you were unwise. It's simply just because you couldn't help it. And circumstances were beyond your control. And may we bless one another as we have the opportunity. Galatians 6 verse 10, Galatians 6 verse 1 through 10, really. As we therefore have opportunity, let us do good unto all men. What though? Especially those of the household of faith. That would include financial. And when we help one another, we must remember, based on the parable Jesus told in Matthew 25, who are we really helping? Who are we really giving our funds to? To Jesus. But now let's talk about the third way in which people may gain or acquire money or wealth. Number one, they may steal it. Number two, they may simply be poor for either positive reasons or neutral reasons. And number three, they may work for it. Let him who stole steal no longer, but what? Rather, let him labor with his hands. You earn it. You're working for your living. And interestingly enough, as we think about that parable, in Matthew chapter 25, it gives us a little bit of insight into what the reward for faithful hard work is. Guess what? More hard work. To those faithful servants, Jesus said, enter into the joy of the Lord, you good and faithful servant, for you have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. More work, more responsibility. And so we see that work is noble, work is honorable, and work is commended by our Savior. Now let's think about the fact that there is no substitute for hard work. Proverbs 10, verse 4. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. 14, verse 23. All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk only leads to poverty. Or as one translation says, idle chatter. Heard a story one time about a person who had graduated college. He had his degree and he had his credentials, and someone said, well, now that you're finished with school, are you looking for work? And the young man thought for a minute, and he said, no, but I would like to have a job. There is no substitute for hard work. Robert Frost, the poet, once said, the world is full of willing people. People who are willing to work, and people who are willing to let them do it. There is no substitute for real, true, hard work. And we have to understand that as we look at the Bible, there are some identifying characteristics of hard workers, laborers. And we turn once again to the book of Proverbs. And number one, as we think about some ways to identify, some ways to think about the laborer, the worker, the person who earns the money that he receives. He does not steal it unjustly. Number one, these people, diligent people, laboring people, working people, the old expression is they plan their work and they work their plan. That's what they do. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 5, remember the first part of that verse? The plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty. The plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty. They plan their work, and then they work their plan. And they adjust accordingly along the way when things perhaps do not work out. God blesses honest, hard work. That's a promise that we read in the Bible. Secondly, we also see that those who labor and those who work are generous people. We go back to Ephesians chapter 4, and it tells us that one of the reasons that we work is that we may be able to help those who are in need. And so we have a generous spirit about us. In Proverbs 11, verse 24 and 25, we read this. Proverbs 11, 24 and 25. There is one who scatters, yet increases more. And there is one who withholds more than is right, but it leads to poverty. The generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will also be watered himself. You see, there is a great difference in the heart and the attitude and the disposition of the person who works regarding the poor versus the lazy or the liar or these negative individuals such as the sluggard and the slothful man that we have talked about regarding the poor, even if it is his fellow poor man. And so the person who works, who knows the value of hard work, who has a discerning spirit, will wisely be generous with what he has to help those who are having a hard time. Another characteristic of the diligent person, the working person, is they are careful not to go into too much debt that they cannot pay. They're careful not to get their heads underwater and to be into too much debt and to have too much debt that they cannot pay. Chapter 22, verse 7. Chapter 22, verse 7. The rich rules over the poor, and you know the second part, the borrower is servant to the lender. Now, I suppose honest debt is sort of almost expected of almost everyone. There might be a few people who can go out and pay cash for a brand new car. I don't know many of them, and I'm certainly not one of them. But that's a possibility. I know very few people who can go and pay outright cash for a house or a business. And in that sense, there is honest debt that is calculated based on what I currently have and what my income is going to be and what I expect it to be, God willing and God providing and God blessing, and if I can cover this for the future. It is not blindly, foolishly buying a bunch of stuff stupidly on credit and acquiring so much debt that I cannot handle it, and the next thing I know, I'm completely underwater and people are coming to take everything that I was mine. It wasn't mine. But people are coming to take everything that was mine and to take it away. Now, some would have a little bit of a problem. Even Christians would have a little bit of a problem with this, because in Romans chapter 13, it tells us, owe no man anything except to love one another. And some have taken that so far as to say, well, you should never borrow money from anyone. You know, even in the old law, there was not necessarily an outright condemnation of borrowing money. And think about some of the parables that Jesus tells. Some of the illustrations are about what? Borrowing money. It's not wrong in and of itself. It's not sinful in and of itself. But we must be very careful and discreet and very wise about how we handle things of that nature, that we do not extend ourselves to the degree that we cripple ourselves. And when it says, owe no one anything except to love one another, I don't think that's a condemnation of having to borrow money to buy a house or to buy a car or some other large investment like that. I read a story one time about a man who bought a new car, and he drove up in his new car to his brother's house, and his brother came out and said, wow, you know, I like your new car. How much do you owe on it? And his brother said, I don't owe a penny on it until the 15th of next month. And when you make an arrangement to pay off your debt in a systematic kind of way, it seems to be that that would not violate the spirit or the intent of the Scriptures. You know the old expression, though, and how we have to be cautious about this, not to incur more debt than we can handle. If your outgo exceeds your income, your upkeep will be your downfall. And that's what we really need to keep in mind. And so we need to be careful when God blesses us not to use it so unwisely that we lose it. It is nice to have the things that money can buy. Everybody raise your hand. It is nice to have the things that money can buy. But it's a shame when we lose the things that money cannot buy. And that happens sometimes. And a fourth characteristic of the diligent worker, the hard worker, is this. He's content. He has learned contentment. He is not greedy and overextending himself. He is content with what God has blessed him with. Proverbs 30, verses 7 through 9. Chapter 30, verses 7 through 9. A remarkable little prayer here. Two things I ask of you, O Lord. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep falsehood and lies far from me. Give me, now here's the real key to our lesson tonight. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Why? Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God. Make me neither poor nor rich. Give me what I need. And we ask God and trust Him that He knows what we need and that He will give exactly what we need. You see, the real measure of our wealth is what we have if someone took every dime from us. What do you still have? What would you be worth if someone took everything from you? What would you still be worth if you lost every cent you have, every possession, every tangible asset? What would you be worth if you lost it all? That's the real measure of wealth. And we know that our soul is worth more than all the world. And as long as we keep ourselves faithfully following Jesus, faithfully following His Word, faithfully serving our God, they can take everything we have. They can take every last penny. They can take every item we own. And we'll still be worth more than all the world. That's the value of the soul. Because you see, money cannot buy salvation. Money cannot buy peace. Money cannot buy tranquility. Money cannot buy true contentment, the kind we're talking about here. Money cannot buy a good name. Proverbs 22, verse 1, my grandfather's absolute favorite scripture in all of the Bible. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. And the good name that I want each and every one of us to have is the name of Christ, the name Christian, the name that identifies us as one of His, as one who understands our value is not on paper, our value is not in the bank, our value is not in the garage, our value is not on a deed somewhere recorded in a courthouse. Our value is in the intrinsic worth of the soul that God created and that we are now responsible for. Choose the good name. Choose the name of Jesus. Obey the gospel. Be restored. Would you come tonight as we stand and we sing?